11th. Cloudy, rain likely, high today 73, inland 65 near Lake Michigan. Here are the numbers right now. Humidity high at 80%, wind from the northeast at 7, 62 degrees. Kenosha, Racine, Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduates and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, and we are really happy to be able to welcome back today, as we do once a month, Nan Calvert from the United Environmental Council. Once a month, we take a morning show and try to focus on some kind of topic of environmental concern, and most of the time, Nan brings with her a very interesting guest. I mean, she always brings a guest, and actually, it's always interesting. Once in a while, Nan flies solo, but once again today, she's brought what sounds like a really interesting guest, a young woman by the name of Becky Wadley. Nan, say a word about when you met Becky.
Well, in person, I just met Becky, I don't know, week or so ago. We've had lengthy email exchanges, and I knew about Becky because a number of months ago we had Cody McDonald on from the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust, and he and I chatted for a little while after that, and he said, you need to speak to my colleague Becky Wadley about something that's going on. And I did, and now it's going to be going on here in our neck of the woods. We were just joking earlier about how things tend to stop at the line between Racine and Milwaukee County, but this time we are part of the whole thing. So it's very exciting. It's a really good project, and we're going to talk about that and also the role of land trusts and all that sort of thing. And also, thank you. I'm very glad to be here. We certainly appreciate having this forum every month.
We're glad to offer it up. So our guest is Becky Wadley, who is with the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust, and she's here specifically to talk about something called Project RED, R-E-D, Riverine Early Detection. Becky, first of all, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. Tell us just a little bit about where you come from originally and how you kind of got interested in what you do.
Sure. So I grew up in Racine. I graduated from high school from Walden 3, so I was pretty heavily involved in their green school activities. Had a little introduction into the environmental world. And then I just graduated from college from University of Wisconsin Stevens Point in December. So there I studied land use planning. And last summer I interned at the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust. So I worked typically in stewardship. And then after I graduated, I came back and joined them to help coordinate these Project Red workshops. So I've been learning a lot about the grant that's funding these workshops and working in aquatic invasive species and gaining more momentum as that goes on.
Wonderful. Wonderful. By the way, were you already pretty environmentally sensitive, or did going to Walden make a huge difference in kind of firing that up in your mind?
I think going to Walden definitely made me more aware of just how in-depth you can get in studying the environment. And then at Stevens Point, I was involved in several different organizations, and it took me a while to find my path. I know that I wanted to study natural resources, but it wasn't until I took a month-long trip to Kenya with a group, and we studied permaculture design. So that involves a lot of soil science and managing your land and all the resources that you have in order to create a sustainable homestead. So it was after that I kind of decided to focus in on land use planning, and then just kind of learned more and more and more about what those options looked like from there.
Very good. Before we get to the Project Red, it probably wouldn't hurt for us to kind of remind our listeners a little bit about what land trusts are. And of course, Nan will chime in as well. This is a topic which is near and dear to her heart, and it's something that she's devoted a lot of her professional energies to as well. Remind our listeners what we're talking about when we're talking about something like the Ozaukee Washington or the Kenosha Racine Land Trust.
So a land trust is a nonprofit organization that works in land conservation. So land typically is preserved either by purchase or by easement. So an easement is a legal document that protects that land from ever being developed, and there's a lot of different types of easement. But typically, a landowner would approach a land trust or such an organization and say that they'd want to preserve this land, either because they're dedicated to it, it's been in their family for years, and they don't want to see it sold, maybe after they pass away. So that's one option, and then that legally binds that land from being developed in the future. And then by purchase is basically a lot of organizations can come together and help provide funding to purchase a piece of land, usually that has special ecological value. So you know, if you have two plots of land and one is full of invasive species and would take a lot of management effort and doesn't really hold too high of ecological value compared to another plot of land that has native species and a lot of rare things and houses a lot of different animals and plants, you're more apt to protect that plot. So by purchase, we would acquire that and then management into the future.
Now, is this something that exists in every county in Wisconsin? I mean, does every county have to have a land trust?
No, it doesn't exist in every county of Wisconsin, although in Wisconsin we do have quite a number of land trusts. The numbers of land trusts have increased over the last few years because, you know, there is a large cohort of people from varying backgrounds that often have to do with the environment or education who realize that the only way we're going to preserve viable open space in perpetuity is to work with land trusts. And so we're very lucky in Wisconsin to have that. There are land trusts all over the U.S. And land trusts typically work within a certain geographic locale, if you will. So we have the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust, and we have the Caledonia Conservancy, which is also a land trust, but they function only in Caledonia. We have the Sino KRLT Conservancy. We used to be two separate organizations, Sino Woodland Education Center and the Kenosha Racine Land Trust. But in June of 2014, we merged because we realized that we had essentially the same mission, education, conservation, and land preservation. And so now we can function as one big organization and be more effective with all of the three components of our mission statement. And so we function within Racine and Kenosha County. And that's helpful because then you can concentrate your efforts and you're not too spread out. So land trusts, there's a lot of misconceptions about land trusts. A lot of people think that we are the government for some reason, but we're not. We're independent, nonprofit organizations. Many land trusts, such as the Kenosha Racine Land Trust, depend on large grants from the government in order to be able to purchase land, because it's difficult to be a land trust and have enough money in your bank account to just go out and purchase land. And that's why we were also worried about what was going to happen with the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund, because we rely on that in order to help acquire land in addition to having private donations and that sort of thing. I wanted to have Becky on to talk about the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust and also the Kenosha Racine Land Trust so that people have a better understanding of what we do. We set aside lands in perpetuity. They're preserved for current and future generations. But we also educate people, and we run workshops, and we help people connect with that land. And the lands that we set aside, though they are preserved in perpetuity, they're not always private lands. They're public lands. So, for example, the Jean McGraw Nature Preserve that the Sino KRLT Conservancy owns is open to the public. Sino is open to the public. So it's not as if we are excluding the community. We are inviting the community. There are certainly private properties that are set aside that, you know, are owned by, you know, people who still live there, and, you know, they don't welcome the public onto their land any more than you and I would. There are properties that are businesses, like the Brighton Woods Orchard, that is set aside in perpetuity. It'll always be an orchard. People are welcome there during their business season. So lands can be preserved in a variety of different ways. They can be businesses. They can be nature preserves. They can be private lands. There's a lot of different ways that we can do this.
And what then exactly are those lands protected from?
Development. So the conservation easement that goes along with a piece of property that's set aside is absolutely specific to that particular property. So if it is, so for example, if it's a private owner that wants this land preserved in perpetuity as a legacy, that landowner works with that specific land trust to craft that document. And it can take quite some time because you're not planning for 5 years into the future or 10 years into the future. You're thinking about 100 and 250 years from now. Hmm. What would you like to have happen with this land? Is it to remain in agriculture forever? Is it to become a sanctuary for wildlife? What, or a combination of those two things? Then that document travels with that property, whether the property is donated to an organization or it's sold to another person or to another entity, that document travels with it in perpetuity, and it has to be followed. It's a covenant that has to be observed.
Hmm. I'm glad you prefaced all this by saying that people sometimes misunderstand this, because mm-hmm. you certainly can kind of jump to erroneous conclusions, particularly when you start saying, you know, this is a document that must be followed. This is, in a sense, the law of the land. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that's, in a sense, very official and very strict.
Yes.
And so on. And before you know it, we start to think of it as being sort of a government entity that's behind it. Mm-hmm. And it's not.
No, not at all. Not at all. Although we, as I said, we do sometimes have to rely on grants from the government, like the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund and other things, in order to bring these properties on board. It's very expensive to do this sort of thing. As Becky said, sometimes properties can be donated to a land trust. Either way, it's basically the same procedure.
Hmm. We certainly have a sense of the in both Kenosha and Racine counties how crucial it is to have something like this, mm-hmm. because this is a very vibrant section of the state, and it's a place where all kinds of development is happening, and not that all development is bad, but it's exactly the kind of place where development tends to really grow almost kind of exponentially, mm-hmm. and sometimes in ways that might be really counterproductive to our overall way of life. What about where you're from, Becky, Ozaukee and Washington counties? How urgent an issue is this, the preservation of land? Are there a lot of pressures, in a sense, that you are fighting against?
It's definitely, I find that there's a different vibe behind it between living in Racine and then working up there. I think there's similar pressures. It's a lot different as far as the support that you gain goes. So we, at the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust, we collaborate on a lot of these different purchases with a lot of different organizations. So commonly we work with MMSD, the Milwaukee Municipal Sewage District. We work with the Green Seams Project and, Washington County, Ozaukee County, the City of Port Washington, the City of West Bend. There's all these different entities that I think they have a longer history of working together on these projects. So there are similar pressures from development and from subdividing these large plots of land. I'd say that the difference between here and there, though, is the collaborations have, I think, been happening for a longer amount of time, and they happen a little more easily. So, and I'm not completely familiar, Nan could probably speak to this more, with how that functions in this area. But just from growing up here and listening to some of the conservation problems and the advantages and positive points of conservation in this area, I think it's a little slower rolling, but I think it's definitely picking up momentum.
So for those of you just joining us, we have Nan Calvert with us in the studios today, and also Becky Wadley, who is with the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust. And we want to move our conversation specifically now to a relatively new project undertaken, and Becky had a lot to do with making this a reality, a project called Project RED, Riverine Early Detection. So first of all, before we kind of even get into exactly what this is, Becky, tell us how this project got put together, this proposal in the first place. I know it involved a pretty significant grant.
Sure.
But tell us the initial concern that sort of propelled all this forward.
Sure. So Project RED is actually a workshop that was developed by the River Alliance of Wisconsin. So they're another conservation group, as Nan was mentioning. We have a lot in this state. But they're another conservation group that works on protecting basically the riverways and streams within our state, tributaries. So they have a lot of really active programs that are aimed towards gauging different groups of people who have interest in riverways. Anglers, boaters, people interested in recreation. And so they developed this workshop as an effort to try and reach out and educate all of those different people. So people from all different backgrounds, land managers, people who are already pretty familiar with aquatic invasive species, down to people who have no idea, but they're interested in learning more. So the River Alliance of Wisconsin developed this workshop, and it's fairly supported by the Wisconsin DNR. So we've worked with a lot of experts from the DNR who come along and help educate people on these workshops as well. So the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust introduction into them came because since 2012 we've been working on a grant from the EPA, Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. And we received this grant with the goal to eradicate and manage four different aquatic invasive species within a six-county project area in southeastern Wisconsin. So that ranges from Sheboygan all the way down south to Kenosha. And so now we're entering the final year of this grant, and one of the goals that they set to meet upon applying for it was to have a certain amount of the funds and efforts allocated for education and outreach about these species that we've been working so hard to eradicate. So we worked with the River Alliance to start hosting these Project Red workshops, and I believe they had one or two last spring before I started interning there. And now this summer we've got, I think, about six or seven on the schedule now, several pending.
So this has become your responsibility then, these workshops.
Yes. Yep. It's, as I think Nan could attest to this, as I think most things are in this field, a lot more work than people, than we anticipated. So I help out with just some of the smaller projects for the grant, but this was kind of given to me to plan and coordinate, and now we originally had intended on having educators from the River Alliance or from the DNR come in and help us instruct, and at our first workshop, we did have a representative from the River Alliance and some of our local friends who are experts in aquatic invasive species come down, but for a lot of the workshops, myself or one of the other people who manages the grant are going to be instructing them. So it's not only a lot of work, but a lot of studying plants as well. So
So tell us about this term riverine. Again, Project RED, R-E-D, stands for Riverine Early Detection. Mm-hmm. What does that term riverine mean?
So riverine is describing basically a river and all that's entailed in that. So the waterway itself, a river or stream, and then the ecosystem around it. So what grows in the river, what grows along the river, what lives on the river.
So it's a river. I mean, it starts out with a river, but it's everything that, it's not just the river bed and the water, it's everything that grows around it too.
I was laughing because I've had that question a lot recently.
I bet.
What the heck is riverine? And I was laughing because those kinds of terms are things that Becky and I and our colleagues use all of the time, and we don't think about it, and we don't realize it. It's sort of speaking a different language than, you know, people who don't do that sort
absolutely
of thing.
Well, when I first read your email, I thought that must be river and then some other word, and they got mished together by mistake, but no mistake at all. I should have looked it up in the dictionary. So let's talk about these specific you said they were aquatic invasive species. Mm-hmm. but are we talking about plants that are growing along these rivers that should not be there?
Both plants and animal organisms in like. So there's a longer list of plants, but there's several different animal organisms that we are instructing about as well. So a lot of different snails and clams, mussels, invertebrate like crayfish. So we talk about those as well, which are not surprisingly very difficult to identify. So we're teaching about these things, and still when you're out in the field during the outdoor portion of a workshop and someone comes up to you with a handful of snails, you're like, well, those might be invasive, but I have a little idea actually, because they look so similar. So we've got a lot of different guides to actually work with those while we're hosting the workshops. But so it's a mix of plant and animals, and there's definitely a lot more plants on the list, and the plants I think are a lot of the times a little easier to work with, but we've got quite the mixture of things that we like to focus on.
Mm-hmm. And so is this a really serious problem up where you are in Ozaukee and Washington? Are these invasive species mm-hmm. rampant?
It's all over the state, all over the country. I think invasive species are a problem that nowhere is not currently trying to deal with. So really the difference comes in the types of species that are invading an area. So the list that the River Alliance generated of common invasive species is fairly long. I think there's maybe 17 to 20 species on that list. But we whittle that down and we tailor it at each workshop. So one species that may be plaguing riverine systems up in the northeast part of the state aren't really going to be maybe the same as those down in our area. So you have to tailor it for each workshop and decide, you know, which species are common to that riverway, maybe which species are the organizations that we're collaborating with, are they currently trying to manage for, that they'd want their volunteers to be more more used to identifying. So definitely they're everywhere, but just different types.
And I think if I could just add, it's the title of the project is Riverine Early Detection. And early detection is the key because, as Becky said, species A might not necessarily be present on the Fox River until the following year. Someone notices one or two. So the earlier you can detect an invasive organism, the easier it is to begin managing it with the goal of eradicating it. It's not to say that you shouldn't address the stands or the populations of invasive species that are already there, but you do want to prevent the spread of it. And it's, you know, there are people who are out in our waterways with regularity, whether you are a photographer or you are an angler or you're a paddler. You know, those people can be the first line of defense in terms of helping invasive species to be identified and marked and then working to get rid of them. And that's why it's basically a citizen science project. And that's why we want to let Kenosha and Racine County residents know that we're going to be doing this. And we would love people to participate in it.
That maybe helps me understand something I was going to ask as well, which is, why did the people who drew up this grant in the first place, and now that happened before you came aboard, is that right?
Yep.
But why would they care about Kenosha and Racine County, for instance? why not just keep it simple, drop a grant that involves specifically Ozaukee and Washington County and let us grapple with our own invasive species? But I suspect this has something to do with interconnectedness, which is something that Nan talks about a lot.
Yeah, and that's exactly right, is that our waterways may not be linked entirely, but each one of them has an indirect, if not a direct link, and especially Lake Michigan. So, I mean, we've got, for example, zebra mussels in Lake Michigan, and I think most people, no matter what their background, are pretty familiar with them. They're the little things that cut your feet when you try and walk on the beach. So zebra mussels are something that are, I believe, on the entire coastline of Lake Michigan. So that's gauging waterways and tributaries from the southern part of the state all the way up to where we break off from the lake. So each system is connected in its own way. So whether a stream... there's a stream connecting, or if a river has a tributary that's connected to another river. So we've got the Milwaukee River that runs through an enormous part of the state, or the Wisconsin River that goes even farther. Or if you go to the entire western part of the state, we run along the Mississippi River. So each of those systems are connected. So oftentimes if you find one species in a certain area, it's really only a matter of time if it goes undetected and there's no response to that, as Nan had mentioned. It's only really a matter of time before it starts to migrate.
So it doesn't pay when it comes to this matter of eradicating invasive species to think in insular fashion.
Right, because they don't understand county lines.
The zebra mussel.
Right, exactly. Or any of our invasive species, whether it's a plant or an invertebrate, the human construct of county lines, it doesn't make any sense because everything is ultimately connected. Whether it's directly connected or a great blue heron picks up some invasive mollusk species and flies, you know, 5 miles or 10 miles away with it. So that's why we need everybody to pull together And you know, the thing is, people who paddle, people who fish, people who hike through these areas, they don't necessarily always stay in their own county. So if you're trained to spot things, you can help other people in other places. And, you know, working together, we can always achieve more than working alone.
So these workshops, then, are mostly geared towards equipping people to be able to detect these kind of species.
Yeah, so the goal behind them is really to train people to work in citizen science. So citizen science, I don't know, maybe that's another one of the terms that, we're more familiar with having working in these types of projects frequently, but citizen science is basically a project where you're gauging members of the public with varying backgrounds, no matter what those may be, to come and help on a project. So one that's pretty frequently done is water monitoring, so water quality monitoring. So you can train people to go out, and it's a great resource because it gets people involved in a lot of projects, but it's also allowing you to have people help you out. So many hands make light work is what we always say. So the goal is to train these people with varying backgrounds to be able to identify these species. And ideally, they would make a commitment to monitor the same stretch of waterway for a while. So if you go through a section of stream at one point at early on in 1 year and you find maybe three different invasive plants, and then you go back that following spring and you can mark whether it's expanded or whether it's decreased in size, and then go back the following year and do the same. So the goal is to have people commit to returning to these same areas. And whether or not they do that, it's still a good thing because it allows people to learn more, and then it also allows you to generate a report on a specific area. So all of the findings that we have during these workshops, we report back to a DNR database. And it's really handy because then as land managers or people who are interested in maybe working on an invasive species removal project can use this database to identify where there are hot spots of invasive species to manage. So for our project at the Sino property with Nan's Conservancy, we're ideally going to be monitoring a stream, so hopefully we'll find her a nice group of people that want to come back and monitor the stream in the future, if we find anything. Hopefully we won't.
We probably will, but hopefully it'll be early so we can do something about it.
You mentioned, Becky, that sometimes in the field portion of these workshops, you have people coming up to you and they have a handful of small little snails, and the matter of figuring out whether these are invasive snails, unwanted snails or not, can really be tricky, especially in the short term or at a glance. So what are people supposed to do about those kind of matters where where really it is not a simple matter to make those kind of distinctions?
So one of the things that we talk about when we're discussing matters for the workshop is where people can go to report their findings and also what their local resources are. So each county and then different regions of the state have aquatic invasive species coordinators. Some of them work for the DNR, some work for their local government. And then there's different organizations like land trusts or conservancies or education centers that will have people who I guess you could consider experts in aquatic invasive species. So for each workshop, we find out who those local people are and try and introduce the participants to what their roles are. And so if someone does find something, say, in closer to our home base in Washington and Ozaukee counties, we have a really good working relationship with our Washington County Aquatic Invasive Species Coordinator. So if someone does find something, we say, well, you can take either really detailed photos of it or collect a sample. And then we teach them the correct way to collect a sample. And here's who you can send this to, or here's who you can email this to. And this person can help them then identify whether, you know, whether this was a zebra mussel or a quagga mussel or maybe a native mussel. And then past that, we would work with them to then go onto this DNR database and report that this is where they found it. And this was, you know, maybe the size of the infestation. So it's really introducing people to kind of the collaborations of groups that we work with, which is a nice opportunity also.
Hmm. Yeah, this is an interesting. This isn't just about zebra mussels and certain kinds of snails and whatever. This is really a story about collaboration and about the human element and about mm-hmm. being vigilant and caring about where you live.
Mm-hmm. And that's an important component to recognize as well, is that we go through this section where we ask people, so where do you think invasive species are coming from? And they all start to shout out parks or construction areas or you know, culverts. But basically the takeaway message from that is that aquatic invasive species and in all invasive species, they follow people because we're the ones that are causing the disturbances that are allowing them to live in these different areas. So it's nice, though, to be able to offer this as a solution instead of saying, you know, we're all bad and we're all dragging aquatic invasive species around with us on our boats. But training people to help to remedy the situation is a nice opportunity, and I think they enjoy it.
Hmm. And it always brings us back to the question, why should we care about this? Who cares about that clam or that crayfish or that plant? Sometimes it's difficult to explain to people because it's about the big picture. It's about long-term effects on an ecosystem. And we should care because these kinds of things, these invasive species, break up those ecosystems and sometimes replace them with a monoculture. And then you have decreased water quality and you have fewer fish and you have fewer plants that are supposed to be there. And little by little, that particular ecosystem, that riverine ecosystem, becomes more and more fragmented. And then perhaps you have more erosion and you know, all different kinds of things happen, but it's a domino effect. But the point is that we can help stop that domino effect, and it affects all of us. For example, you know, in Wisconsin, our waterways are responsible for generating millions and millions of dollars in tourism revenue. But when you have waterways that are clogged with invasive aquatic plants and they're stuck to everybody's motors or nobody wants to wade into the water, unfortunately, that economic benefit begins to decrease. And it's sad that we always have to put a monetary benefit on things that are invaluable, but that's how most people understand it. So it has wide-ranging effects on a variety of things.
Hmm. Well, it's gratifying to see some different strategies being employed, and particularly something like this, as you said, Nan, which involves early detection, mm-hmm. which is such an important thing, to not allow some of these invasive species to sort of take hold before it's even maybe possible to eradicate them. What is the component in this in terms of trying to chart its success, its effectiveness?
So I'd say attendance mainly, but then also if you're looking at really just the number of people that have a takeaway from it. So if you've got a group that is really enthusiastic and wants to come back and do this annually, that's really a great opportunity. And so we have one workshop where we have a teacher from a school in Racine that's going to be coming. And his goal with it is to take the knowledge and then spread it to the students at his elementary school and train them to do lake monitoring so that can become a component of their science courses, is going out and monitoring waterways in Racine County to see if there are aquatic invasive species. So that may be one person coming to the workshop, he's going to be spreading that knowledge to a really wide group of people. But then, I mean, it comes all the way down to, I had a workshop last weekend, one of the first ones, and there was three people there, aside from myself, and two of which were with the hosting organization. So really only one person. But I was in the office in West Bend yesterday, and this one person, an older gentleman who had come to the workshop, came in and told me that he was out fishing with his grandchildren and thought that he found a colony of invasive snails, and then also maybe a patch of Eurasian water milfoil.
Mm.
So he comes in and he tells me where it is and what he thought they were, and he identified them by looking at this characteristic, and then he says, so what do we do next? And, it was kind of, I don't want to say disheartening, but I was a little maybe disappointed that only one person had showed up to this workshop, but to see that that one person had come back in and already was putting the knowledge to use and had his grandkids out and was teaching them that, you know, this is this snail, this is bad, it was very gratifying, and I was really glad that that had happened.
Yeah, well, and it also points to the fact that one person can make an enormous difference. Mm-hmm. One person who cares and one person who takes the time to get properly trained in order to be mm-hmm. part of this vanguard.
Mm-hmm. And his mm-hmm. motivation is because he's an angler, and he enjoys fishing in any waterway, but he loved to trout fish. And our cold water streams and cold water fish populations, like trout, are really heavily impacted by the presence of certain invasive species. So, different people come with different backgrounds and different reasons for being there, but the takeaway, I think, for all of them is similar, and that's very good to see.
Yeah. So, for instance, then, one of the most important things is for you to somehow reach the people who are out on the rivers the most.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like this older gentleman, you don't want to spend all your time at these workshops, in a sense, preaching to the choir.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to be penetrating to this particular population, and it's in their own self-interest. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they want a river that's generously populated by the kind of things they're fishing for, they need to be part of this effort.
Mm-hmm.
What are the strategies by which you've been trying to reach this particular population? Because I'm sure that's a tricky thing.
It has been, and that's one of the reasons and one of the great things that we've had about working with collaborating organizations. So the Land Trust, we are planning the workshops and kind of being that connecting body between the River Alliance of Wisconsin and the organizations that we're working with. And then our grant is supplying any of the funds necessary for the workshops. But we are identifying organizations that have an interest in teaching their volunteers or their neighbors about this sort of workshop. And then they're really more familiar with the local resources. So, and Nan can tell us more about this, but when planning the workshop with Nan, we helped to work on the advertisements and posters and planning the workshop, but really then we give these resources to our collaborating organizations, and they're really the ones that help out with the outreach, which is great. So, and I know Nan had a lot of work done on that for the workshop at Seno.
Mm-hmm. So all of the groups within Racine and Kenosha counties, hopefully all of them, I'm sorry if I missed one, will be getting an announcement about this workshop. We're running it at Seno Conservancy on August 1st. And we hope to have a good turnout. And I'd like to reiterate that this workshop is free. Everything you need will be provided, including a canoe and paddles, waders if we're actually getting into a stream, all the materials necessary for the workshop. All you need to do is show up with your coffee cup, and and we'll get going. So organizations such as Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network and Sierra Club and Greening Greater Racine and Racine County Conservation League and, oh my goodness, the list goes on and on. All of those organizations would benefit from sending at least one person to these workshops. If there are any sort of officially more or less organized groups of anglers, those people should be coming to this workshop. All kinds of people, even if you don't fish, Perhaps you live near a body of water. Maybe you live in a neighborhood that has a tributary running through it. Those are the kind of people that we're looking for, just people who are generally interested in doing this. I find that a lot of families, they like to bring their kids out and they go to natural areas and they see things and they don't know what they are and they'd like to help out in some way. This kind of a workshop is definitely for you.
Right. Well, and there's something kind of exciting about going into an area and going searching and finding something and bringing it to the attention of the authorities. I mean, that it almost sounds like something that could be its own television series or something.
Right,
it's got that kind of excitement component in some respects. I mean, I suppose we shouldn't oversell that. I mean,
but we should.
Yeah, right. Then again, yeah. So, is there a place where people can see all of this information in one place?
Sure. So our website has a list of all of the Project Red workshops that are happening this summer. So that's www.owlt.org. And then NAN's website has more information about the particular workshop that will be happening at CINO. And what's your link?
It's www.cinokrlt.org. So it will be up on our website as well as our Facebook page. You can give me a shout by calling 262-539-3222 or send me an email at nan@cinokrlt.org, and I would be happy to get you registered and get you all of the information that you need for August 1st.
Very good. Well, this has been really interesting, and now I certainly know what a riverine is, and more important, understand better, as do our listeners, the importance of early detection when it comes to detecting unwanted invasive species in our river systems. Becky Wadley is with the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust. Becky, it was great to have you here. So glad to hear about this wonderful project. We hope that it yields great success and widespread eradication of these invasive species, and I'm really glad you could be here to share about it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I hope so as well.
Yeah. And Nan, do you have any calendar events you need to tell us about?
Well, of course. There's always something going on. So the first one I'll mention is something called the Slippery Slopes Sleepover at CINO Conservancy this Saturday, starting at 3 p.m. on Saturday the 13th and running until Sunday, June 14th at 3 p.m. There are still spaces available, so if you would like to register, please call 539-3222. We have some fun events planned, some games, a night hike, roasting marshmallows, and then there will be a Sunday brunch in the barn. So if you'd still like to register, you're more than welcome to do so, 539-3222. Sierra Club is hosting a workshop called Build a Monarch Rearing Box on June 14th at 2 p.m. The fee is $15. You do have to register. You can call 639-0908 to register, or you can just go to the Sierra Club Southeast Gateway Group website to register. The Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center is celebrating the summer solstice on June 20th at 7 p.m. The event is free as usual, but donations are appreciated. There will be a very fun and interesting parade around the grounds to honor and observe the animals and plants. There will be a ceremony with a bonfire, and please do bring a seasonal appetizer to share. Pringle Nature Center will have a Father's Day summer solstice celebration on Sunday, June 21st from 7:30 to 9 p.m. The fee is $5. Registration is required, and you can call or register online. Hawthorne Hollow has its summer concert series going on. The fee is $7. There will be food and beverages available for purchase. So on Friday, June 26th, from 6 until 9:30 p.m., a group by the name of Memory Fields will be playing. So if you need more information, go to the Hawthorne Hollow website, or just go ahead and show up, and it'll be a wonderful time in a beautiful setting.
And that's it.
That's it. I surprised you.
You're
didn't
fast.
I?
Well, good for you. Nan Calvert, always great to have you here on The Morning Show. Thank you so much for joining us again today, and look forward to seeing you in July.
Yes, it's truly my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Very good. Tomorrow on the Morning Show, a look at the importance of higher education in the health of our democracy. WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information at carthage.edu. Support for the Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Clouds in our forecast and rain today, a high of 73 degrees, overnight low of 53, a high tomorrow of 79 degrees. This is WG.